All right, Warren, you ready?
I am ready.
All right. So I wanted to say good afternoon to everyone. Welcome to the mentorship call. Just wanted to let you know that today we have a very special guest. We have Warren M. Jewer, the public insurance adjuster extraordinaire. Warren has over 20 years of experience, and he's actually going to talk to us today about what is a public adjuster and why do we need a public adjuster on our team. Well, if you wish to ask Warren a question, you know you can press *0. Warren's going to be taking questions at the end, so definitely press *0. So without further ado, welcome Warren M. Jewer. Hey, Warren.
Hey there. Good afternoon. Thanks very much for having me and for that nice introduction. Good afternoon, everybody. If you're participating live on this call, welcome. If you're listening in later on a podcast, again, welcome. As he indicated, I am a public insurance adjuster, and the distinction between a public insurance adjuster as opposed to other sorts of adjusters is that, lo and behold, we work for the public. That means we work for you. We don't work for the insurance companies. A lot of people ask me, why would you work for the public as opposed to working for the insurance companies? And the truth of the matter is I worked for the insurance companies for the first 20 years of my career. I've been in the insurance claims industry now for about 25 years altogether, and as I said, the first 20 with the insurance companies as an adjuster, ultimately then going into being a claims examiner, which is the person who sits inside the office and sort of directs the activities of the guys out in the field and gals, and reviews their work. And finally, I was a claims manager directing the entire operations of the insurance company's claim activities. So let me see here. I'm also an accredited member of the National Association of Public Insurance Adjusters. NAPIA is the acronym, and they are basically the largest organization of public insurance adjusters in the United States. I'm also a subject matter expert retained by the Insurance Division of the Rhode Island Insurance Department for matters on public insurance adjuster examination testing questions and the sort. And I'm on the approved list of reference umpires for the Rhode Island, for the Massachusetts Division of Insurance. That means that when a dispute arises as to the amount of an insurance claim, the parties can demand reference or the appraisal clause of the policy. And if they cannot agree on who will umpire the two referees, they petition to the insurance commissioner's office in Massachusetts, and I'm one of several that can be appointed by the insurance commissioner. I'm also an expert witness consultant for lawyers in litigation matters involving insurance first party. We'll get into that a little bit further in the presentation. First party disputes. And most importantly, I'm an advocate for property owners. I'm licensed in the states of Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Maine, Vermont, and others. So who would hire a public adjuster? My clients range from typical homeowners to landlords, property owners, business owners, and property managers. The types of insurance policies, people don't realize that there are different types of property insurance policies, and they're commonly divided into two major categories being personal lines insurance and commercial lines insurance. Under the personal lines, you've got the typical homeowner's policy, which is an owner-occupied residence. There's the dwelling fire policies, which are for non-owner-occupied or rental properties. Condominium unit owners could be under personal lines, and then renters. Under the commercial lines policies, you've got the commercial package policy, referred to as a CPP. Business owners policies, referred to as a BOP or BOP, and manuscript policies, which are custom or tailor-made policies, basically chosen between you and your agent for the coverages that you need. Now, we've got that as background. The package policies that I was referring to, they basically include, or the reason they're called a package policy is that they include multiple coverages within one policy. So you can have your first party, which is your own damages, so the building, contents, things like that, and third party or liability insurance all bundled together in one policy. You pay one premium and you get a broad spectrum of coverages. The policies can range from what's called all risk coverage. All risk is basically anything that you can think of that could damage a property under the sun, any event, unless the policy specifically says that the loss is not covered or the cause is not covered. So all risk basically is anything unless the policy specifically says no coverage or limited coverage. A named peril insurance policy, on the other hand, is completely the opposite. Nothing is covered under these policies unless the perils or the causes of loss are specifically listed in the insurance policy. So it's a little bit of a flip-flop from all risk, anything's covered unless the policy says no, to named peril, which is always a no unless the policy says yes, we do cover it. Those package policies also include your liability, which is coverage for personal injury, med pay, property damage to others, things like that. Now, under the manuscript policies, these are the custom or tailor-made coverages, sort of a la carte, if you will. These can specifically insure property alone, property and liability, similar to a package policy, business income, or any one or more of those listed. The coverage can also specifically insure for only liability, you know, just injury to others, medical payments, things like that, with no first party or your own property coverages. And you can specifically insure for loss of simple business income without the other things. Now, when you have a claim, the policy will tell you basically how the claims are settled. There are several types, but the two most common are called replacement cost value, or RCV, and actual cash value, or ACV. I'm sure you've heard these terms before. Many people don't understand what the distinction is between the two different types of policies. The replacement cost policy basically is the total amount of damage without deduction for depreciation. So it's the full amount of the claim. Actual cash value, ACV, on the other hand, is the depreciated amount of a property damage claim. Depreciation is factored or devaluation in the property for things such as the age, condition, and use of the property, that an adjuster will deduct from the total replacement cost value to give you your settlement. This is interesting because a lot of people will say, well, I have damage, but it's someone else's fault. So I'm not going to pursue a claim under my policy. I'm going to go against their policy. That's what's called a third-party claim. You are making a claim against someone else's policy as a third party. You don't have that contract that exists between that insurance company and yourself by paying the premium yourself. That's first party. So as a third-party claimant, you make a claim against someone else who is legally liable for causing the damage to your property, and their responsibility under the laws of at least these two states, Mass and Rhode Island, and most others, by the way, is at actual cash value. So they are not responsible to you or to anyone else for the replacement cost value. That is a major distinction and something that people should really take into consideration when determining how they're going to file a claim. So, for example, if a truck runs into a building and, you know, goes through the front wall and causes a bunch of damage to the building, and you decide that you're not going to pursue a claim under your policy, that you're going to go directly to the truck's insurance policy, you are not going to recover the full value of your claim because they don't owe you it. They only owe you under the legal principle of actual cash value. When you have your own policy and you file a claim as a first party and you adjust the claim with the insurance company, they will also pay you actual cash value up front. However, under the terms and conditions of a replacement cost insurance policy, you have paid an additional premium to be made whole in the aftermath of an event. So when you make the repairs, you can go back to your insurance company and recoup the difference between the actual cash value and the total replacement cost value of your loss. You can also recover when you present a claim that someone else is liable for. So in the example given of the truck driving through the building, your insurance company will apply your deductible. However, they will turn around and pursue the truck company for the damages and recover your deductible and reimburse you for that through a process called subrogation. So why is it good to hire or to have a public insurance adjuster as part of your team? As investors or property owners, it's really about the bottom line. And having an experienced person with the expertise to give you advice and personal service during the claim makes complete sense for a lot of people. Not all people, but if you think about it in these terms, a public insurance adjuster is a professional service provider, similar to an attorney, where if you have a lawsuit, you don't have to hire an attorney and go to court. You can represent yourself in court and defend against whatever claims are being made against you or charges. But most people recognize that an attorney probably has more insight, advice, and can guide you through that process better than you could do it yourself. Or in filing taxes, you can prepare your own taxes or hire an accountant, a CPA, to do them for you. The CPA probably has the experience, knows the ins and outs of the tax code, loopholes that you can take advantage, different shelters and things to help you pay less for your liabilities and you know, maximize the amount that you get back in your taxes, or minimize the amount that you have to pay. So in addition to the services that a public adjuster can provide, similar to those that I've mentioned by an attorney or an accountant, they're experts in insurance coverage and damage assessment. So when we meet with a customer, get a copy of their policy, we can look through the various coverages that the insurance company's adjuster, believe it or not, is not obligated to point out to you. They don't have to tell you that you're eligible to make a claim for X, Y, and Z. They only review a claim that you have raised and brought to their attention. So as a public adjuster, one of my primary duties is to make sure that my clients are getting the full benefit of their insurance policies by maximizing those coverages that are available to them under their specific policy. It's also my duty to act in the best interest of only my client as opposed to the insurance company, and to fully assess their damages and losses, because a public insurance adjuster, after all, is being paid by the policyholder a percentage of the settlement. So maximizing the settlement makes sense for you, and it makes sense for me. Looking at a public adjuster as an expense is probably not the best way of looking at it. It's really an investment in maximizing the recovery that you get from your insurance policy after having a loss. Finally, it's business to a public insurance adjuster. It's not personal. So when people are intimately involved in their own claims, you know, emotions can rule the day. Things can be said that are later regretted. And oftentimes, people will be embarrassed to claim certain things. To a public adjuster, it's all business. We're going to look at every single item and make a claim based on whatever the claim is, without excluding those things that a homeowner, for example, might decide, that's just a trivial thing. I'm not going to claim it. So the primary difference between a company or an independent adjuster and a public adjuster, sometimes also referred to as a private adjuster, by the way, is really a differing approach to the claims handling. A company adjuster is representing the insurance company's interest, not necessarily your interest. They're taught to minimize the loss and the total exposure that the insurance company must pay for their customers' claims. A public adjuster, on the other hand, represents your interests, not the interest of the insurance companies, and we're trained to maximize every benefit of the insurance policy and the total compensation for the customers. So you might imagine, with two varying approaches to the handling of claim, one looking at it to minimize the loss for the insurance company, and the other looking at it to maximize the benefit under the policy for the owner or the policyholder, it's sort of like a head-on collision. And things can, frankly, get heated from time to time. And that's where you want the skill and experience of a public adjuster who's well-versed in insurance policy, instruction language, and has adapted to successful negotiation skills. So I was asked to give a couple of examples of events that I've experienced, or situations that I've experienced, and to let you know, let you in on a little bit of why customers chose to hire a public adjuster and what the outcomes were. So in the first example, I was hired by a commercial building owner who was trying to just, report the claim and deal with the insurance adjuster on their own without anyone else involved. And ultimately, it was a wind damage claim to a large commercial building, large roof, and the insurance adjuster came out from the company. He took a look at it and sent them a letter basically saying that, the loss did not exceed the deductible of the policy. No payment for you. The building owner obviously didn't agree with this. He already had a roofer look at it, and there were, they were off considerably, six figures to be exact. So after involving me, my taking a look at the situation, contacting the insurance company to have them reopen it, and then have a new adjuster assigned to the case, we ultimately negotiated and settled a claim for that customer going from zero below their deductible initially to $128,000 in their pocket. It took about 6 weeks, by the way. The second example is my favorite. It's a homeowner that hired me for a fire loss. It was a very significant fire to their home that occurred during the middle of the winter a couple years ago. And basically the fire burned for a prolonged period of time. The firefighters had a hard time putting it out due to freezing. Hydrants that, were frozen. They had to find alternate sources of water. And once they started pouring the water onto the building, the roof, under the weight of the water and the frozen ice and whatnot, basically caved in to the second floor of the house, which then caused the second floor of the house to cave in atop the first floor of the house. So basically two levels collapsed down, into the basement. The insured or the homeowner had presented their claim to their insurance company, and the adjuster came out and thought that the building was repairable. Thought that basically they could, remove the debris from inside the building, reuse the first floor exterior walls and the first floor framing. To build it new, and ultimately wound up giving the customer a check for $78,000. Now, that was not nearly enough. So after involving me, assessing the damage to the property, contacting the insurance company, reopening the case, and getting an adjuster to come back out, meet with me, that customer realized a 237% increase in their settlement, taking it from $78,000 to $273,000 in their pocket. There should be a couple of aha moments, as Oprah liked to say, in there for you. Those customers certainly had their aha moments. I have maintained excellent relations with both of these, and to this day, they still refer people to me in the event that someone they know has something happen. So the types of claims that a public adjuster can handle for you really depends on the skill and competency of the public adjuster. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit and tell you that, first of all, most public insurance adjusters are going to have far more experience than many of the company adjusters. The reason I say that is because public adjusters most commonly come from the insurance company side before they transition into what I view as the good guy side and working for the policyholders as a public adjuster. The adjusters that you may draw from the insurance company side could be somebody in their first week out of college or out of the company training that has never handled anything like this before. Insurance companies love to hire people out of college, put them through their internal training, and set them out on the road and say, here you go, go pay some people. And they are completely incompetent in handling a lot of different types of claims. So a public adjuster, you know, obviously large claims like a fire or a major flood or major water damage claim, those are the obvious. But you have frozen pipes this time of year. Those can be very difficult to handle if you're not an experienced adjuster because, first of all, pipes are typically run inside walls and above ceilings. And who knows how many breaks you have in there until, you know, you know where the water is leaking, but until you get that part fixed, put water back in the system, you don't necessarily know how many other breaks you have. And then the water damage aspect of frozen pipes obviously is another part to deal with. Hurricanes, that might be an obvious one. Ice dams. I love ice dams because insurance company adjusters will come out and, in my experience, they will look at a roof and say, well, I don't see any damage to the roof, so we're not going to pay you for that. And there's just a stain, water stain on the interior of the building, so we're just going to pay you to paint it over. They don't take into consideration anything at all, like the water got inside, refroze, basically popping framing nails, you know, your interior drywall or plaster, your insulation inside the walls or the ceilings could be absolutely saturated. There's all sorts of things that go into ice dams that don't get taken into consideration by a lot of insurance company adjusters. Lightning and mold, puffbacks. What is a puffback? So a puffback is when the heating system has a failure and it results in the products of combustion building up and basically causing a mini explosion with inside the heating unit for the property, which disperses soot throughout everything. And it can be very difficult, number one, to be able to identify if it's a slight puffback. You may not even notice it until you go and move something and you realize that there's an outline there of black or gray sooty substance. These are very difficult to address because pretty much you have to clean top down everything in the building and all the contents, documents, anything that was in that building because the fine soot attaches to everything. Other losses that you might consider hiring a public adjuster for, tornadoes, theft, water damage, wind damage, and pretty much anything else that you can think of. Personal property losses, renters sometimes will hire a public adjuster when a fire has occurred in the building or a water damage claim to itemize and present their claim for loss of personal property. That can also be true in a business. Sometimes the business rent spaces, such as in a storefront or something like that, and they have no exposure for the building itself, but for the personal property, business personal property in this case, or their stock, are all things that are insured that can suffer losses. Loss of rent, business income, payroll, seasonal increases or offsets in income. These are all parts of claims that we address and deal with every single day. The one thing that I like to make people aware of is imposters as public adjusters. There's a couple types of people out there that sort of will dissuade people from hiring a real public insurance adjuster. One such group is contractors. Contractors who come out and say that they'll handle your claim and that they'll deal with the insurance company, these guys are just outright dangerous because, first of all, they have no expertise in insurance, and the only thing that they're looking out for is themselves. They're trying to maximize the amount that they get paid to do the job. They don't care how much you get from the insurance company. And by telling you that they'll deal with the insurance company and you don't need to worry about anything, beware. You do need to worry because at the end of the day, I've seen many people stuck with, you know, 5 or 6 figure bills from a contractor who said that they would deal with the insurance company, who ultimately wind up telling you, oh, we didn't get enough from the insurance company, but this is the amount that you owe me. That's just not good business. The second group is insurance company preferred vendors. Preferred who? And who prefers them? Of course, the insurance company. Who do you think they're loyal to? Not you. Third group of people is the unlicensed or unqualified public insurance adjusters. Make sure when you hire a public adjuster that you're hiring somebody who's licensed in the state that you're in. My best advice is to make sure that they're accredited through the National Association of Public Insurance Adjusters. Interview the public adjuster before you hire them. They're really applying for a job. I mean, if you're not impressed with them, if you don't get a good feeling in speaking with them, keep looking. Find somebody else. And that basically brings me to the end of the conversation. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great presentation, Warren. We really appreciate that. We should have some questions. Do we have an operator?
Yes, we have an operator. No one's queued up yet.
Okay, so you guys know the queue. If you want to ask Warren a question, you star zero. Hit star zero, and you will be able to ask him a question live. But I do have one question, Warren, that was emailed to me. I was wondering if you could answer this one. It says, are there any different laws when it comes to public adjusters in each state?
Great question, and yes, there are. Some states don't license public insurance adjusters at all. So, I mean, it really could be, the kid delivering your newspaper every morning going out there and pretending to be a public insurance adjuster. But many states these days are licensing public insurance adjusters, and you can always log into your state's insurance department and if you Google or look up online, you should be able to find whether they license or do not license public adjusters, and to even verify that the adjuster is licensed in that state. That's all of information that's available online.
Okay. Operator, do we have any questions? She must be.
Yes, we do. I'm sorry. Yeah. Our first question comes from Heather. Heather, go ahead. Wait. 1 second. She should be unmuted now. Go ahead, Heather.
Oh, okay. Okay. Hi there, guys. Hi, Jermaine. Hi, Warren. It's Heather.
Hey, Heather. How are you?
Good. How are you both?
Doing good, thanks. What's your question?
Good. So, Warren, I'm wondering if there could be any sort of hidden disadvantages to using an insurance adjuster, such as is there any way for insurance companies to find out that you've used an adjuster and then they are less inclined to deal with you? Is that ever an issue?
Not Heather, not to my knowledge. And again, I worked on the insurance company side for years and years. There is. Without disclosing any sort of industry secrets here, when you file a claim, no matter what kind of claim it is, whether it's on your house, a business, a car, there is a database that the claim gets reported to. So insurance companies, when you apply for insurance, are going to know that a claim was filed on that property, or whatever, workers' comp, whatever the case may be. They don't necessarily know whether or not you utilize a public insurance adjuster in helping you with that claim, and not that there's anything wrong with hiring a public insurance adjuster. One of the things that I wanted to clarify, and this gives me a little bit of an opportunity to do it, is there is a stigmatism out there attached to the public insurance adjusting industry that some are, and probably rightly so in some cases, because some are pretty unscrupulous. You know, they'll go out and they'll stand out in front of a building that's on fire for hours on end and sort of nag the homeowners and say, you know, you need me and you can't handle this on your own. Basically ambulance chasers. I would personally advise people to stay away from people like that. If they have to go out and stand in front of somebody's house in the middle of the night while it's burning to solicit business, it's probably not the right person for you.
Right, right. Well, this has been really helpful, Warren. I really appreciate the call because I wasn't really aware of insurance adjusters, and it sounds like an amazing service. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Heather.
And our next question is from Dan. Yes, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Warren. Dan Byers. I've got two questions for you. One, would it be advisable to have a public insurance adjuster to do an audit of existing insurance policies for gaps in coverage before ever getting a claim? And then the second question is, how does a public insurance adjuster charge? Is it a set fee, a percentage of settlement, or some other fee schedule?
Well, first of all, hi, Dan, and thanks for your questions. To answer your first question, I'm going to go to your second question first. Most public insurance adjusters work on a flat fee basis, and in most states, that's regulated by the state. So in my states here in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, it is regulated at a flat 10% of whatever the amount of the insurance settlement is. So not the amount of the loss. So if it's a $500,000 loss and a $300,000 payout, the fee is based on the amount that was paid out, not the amount of the overall loss. I'm sorry, what was the first question again?
Yeah, the first question, before we get back to the first question, so that 10% fee, if the settlement was $300,000 per your example, that would be coming out of the settlement check, or is that something that can be also paid by the insurance company paying the claim?
It really depends on the state that the loss occurs in. In my states, the insurance companies do not issue the public adjuster's payment separately from the amount paid to the policyholder. They issue one check, and then the policyholder is responsible for the payment of the public adjuster's fees out of that settlement to the public adjuster. In certain states, New York comes to mind, they have regulations that require the insurance company to pay the public adjuster's fee separately from the amount of the settlement. So they'll deduct it and issue a check to the public adjuster separate and apart from the amount that's paid out to the policyholder.
Okay. All right. So, So my first question is, would it be advisable to have a public insurance adjuster do an audit of existing insurance policies for gaps in coverage before ever getting a claim?
Right. So that, at least in the states that I operate in, is not within the purview of what a public adjuster is licensed and authorized to do by the insurance departments. I don't know if that is the case in all states, to be very honest, but at least in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, that falls under the purview of a licensed insurance agent or broker and not a public insurance adjuster.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Dan.
Up next, we have Grace. Grace, please state your question.
Hey, I have a comment first, and I have a question. So my comment is I've used an insurance adjuster in the past, and they are phenomenal. They will get the most amount of money allotted to you, and their fee, they are worth every single penny. So I have nothing but praise for insurance adjusters. Now, here's my question. Does the bank ever not go with your recommendations, and will they reject your offer? And if so, how do you proceed as a business owner?
Well, first of all, hi, Grace, and thank you for the vote of confidence against for public adjusters. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Banks can do a lot of things. The one thing that they really cannot do is they are not experts in the valuation of insured losses or coverage, for that matter. So a bank really has to accept whatever the insurance company and or public adjuster have negotiated as a fair and reasonable settlement. The banks, however, become important when the insurance company issues a loss settlement payment on a property that has, let's say, a mortgage or you know, a home equity line or something like that on it. The insurance companies are required under the terms and conditions of the insurance policy, as well as many state regulations, to include that mortgage interest on the loss settlement payment. So oftentimes a check will come out from the insurance company payable to the policyholder, public adjuster, and to however many mortgages are listed under that policy, and then the policyholder has to go and get the endorsements of the banks. The banks can sometimes dictate the terms of release of the funds, sometimes requiring them to be held in escrow and ultimately require all sorts of documentation after the claim has been settled. That falls outside of the adjustment or settlement of the insurance claim. It really comes down to a matter of, you know, having to deal with the mortgage company, who is the legal owner of the property until that mortgage is paid in full, and dealing with whatever process they have in place. Under bank-owned properties, some of my clients are banks, and they will hire me in the event that there is damage to a property. At that point, I am working with the representatives at the bank in negotiating and coming to an agreed settlement with the insurance company. Sometimes that is not a straightforward process. There are multiple parties involved, but ultimately, the service that I offer to my clients is to get them the maximum that can be retrieved from their insurance policy, and present and have them understand that this is the best possible settlement that they will be able to get. Thanks for the question.
Well, thank you very much for the answer, and I'm a complete advocate for having an insurance adjuster in your back pocket because you need them.
Thank you,
Grace.
Thank you.
Next on the line, we have Roy. Roy, please state your question.
Ms. Cole and Jermaine, Happy New Year, brother. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Hey, Roy, how are you?
Pretty good. The question centers around an umbrella policy, Warren. The state that you work in, can you extend outside of the property? Can it extend outside of the state? And since you may not have a license to work in that state, will that umbrella policy allow you to interact with property that we may have purchased outside of a state that you don't necessarily work in? I think that's the question here.
Okay. Let me try to tackle that. There's a couple of things that the term umbrella in the insurance world can refer to two things. Number one, an umbrella is generally a liability insurance policy that is excess to any other underlying policies that someone may have. So it's not really, I don't think that's the context in which you're using it. People will sometimes purchase those umbrella policies for, let's say, $1 million or $2 million over and above the amount of their insurance for their cars and homeowners insurance and things like that. The context in which I think you're using the term umbrella is, can a public insurance adjuster work outside of their licensed states? And the
right.
answer to that oftentimes is yes, we can. So if a client has business interests in a particular state, number one, the public adjuster can apply for a temporary or emergency license through the state insurance department. And oftentimes, those are offered with reciprocity from the other states that that adjuster is licensed in. So under my example, I am licensed in four New England states as a public insurance adjuster. I also have licenses in other states as an adjuster, not a public adjuster. That's left over from my days when I worked for an insurance company, but I have maintained both licenses. Now, some states make no distinction between an adjuster's license and a public insurance adjuster's license. So in those states, it's very easy for me to transact and handle business in those states under just a general adjuster's license. If it's a state that I do not have an active license for, if they require it, again, not all states require an adjuster's license, then it's a very simple process of applying for one and being issued either on a full-time permanent basis or on a temporary emergency basis.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Roy.
All right. See you.
There appears to be no further questions at this time.
So Warren, if anybody wanted to get in contact with you, what is your contact information? Because I'm having people who are emailing me asking me about that.
Sure. My websites are the primary source you can go to. You can go to claimsri, as in Rhode Island, .com. Or claimsma, as in Massachusetts.com. So claimsri.com or claimsma.com. You can call me at 508-761-8800, or from any cell phone, you can dial ** claims and I will pick up.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So, operator, do we have any other questions?
Not at this moment.
Okay. So, I guess we'll wrap this up.
Yeah, one just came in. I'm going to pick them up. One moment, Jermaine.
Okay, no problem.
This has been great, guys. I'm sure there's other questions out there. Don't be shy.
Oh, yeah, there's people kind of shy, so but they'll have some questions later for you. They'll probably want to ask them in private, so you probably will be getting a lot of phone calls and a lot of questions on your website. So if you want, so your website is claimsri.com and claimsma.com, and your phone number is 508-761-8800. Is that correct?
That's right. And if you have a phone like everyone else, it's just the simple ** claims.
And is there an email, Warren?
Yeah, absolutely. info at claimsma.com.
Okay.
Okay. Our next question comes from Stephanie. Stephanie, please state your question.
Insurance. If you have a property that's partially in a flood zone and you secure federal flood insurance, what are the average expectations in terms of what you would expect to recover in that type of a situation if there were partial damage to your property? Let's say it's not a devastating situation similar to what we saw earlier this year, last year.
Yeah. First of all, hey, Stephanie, thanks for the question. Something happened at the beginning when you were being transferred on off of mute, so I didn't hear the full question. Could you just restate it for me, please?
Right. My question is regarding flood insurance and what is a reasonable expectation in terms of collection. If I'm looking at a property that is partially in a floodplain, I wanted to know if I went through the process of securing flood insurance, whether or not I could expect to receive full damage or partial damage. What is the sort of the calculation methodology associated with recovery under flood insurance?
Okay, I think I understand the question, and the answer is it's unique and individual to each property. In a partial loss scenario, you really need to have somebody come out and do an evaluation as to the scope and amount of damage that was sustained to the property and create an appraisal for that. So it's not a set figure, and sometimes you involve multiple policies. You can involve the primary insurance on the structure and the flood insurance policy under the National Flood Insurance Program simultaneously, because under, let's say, a hurricane, flooding is really what we call ground-up damage, and all the other perils are top-down, meaning so you have a hurricane that comes through, blows off the roof, rain comes in and causes damage. That is top-down damage. That falls under the primary insurance policy, whether it's a homeowner's or a business owner's policy. And then waves come in from, a nearby water source and then, flood out the property up to two or 3 feet or something like that. That's flood damage or bottom ground-up damage. So you can be involving both simultaneously and having partial losses under both.
Okay, I understand. And in the situation where you have damage that's ground up, what is the best process forward? I've heard from several people that, it's important to get the drywall out immediately, but other people said you have to wait for the insurance adjuster to actually get there. So just as a, adjustment 101, what should an owner be doing immediately after a bottom-up situation to ensure maximum recovery and or documentation?
Fantastic question. Thanks for asking it. And first thing is call a public insurance adjuster. not as a shameless public Not as a shameless self-promotion, but because you'll have an expert who can guide you through those very questions. Generally speaking, a public adjuster is going to come out, take photographs of the damage before you do anything to preserve the evidence to show to the insurance company. So in the event that you do not go with a public adjuster, my first recommendation is, use your cell phone, get a camera, take a lot of photographs. Then comply with the terms and conditions of the insurance policy, one of which is you have to take reasonable action to save and preserve the property from sustaining further damage. You can actually jeopardize your insurance coverage by waiting and not doing anything, mitigate damages in the hopes of getting an insurance company adjuster out there to evaluate for you. But let's face it, when one of these events that has happened in very recent history or anything like those occur, the insurance industry becomes instantaneously overwhelmed with claims, and getting an insurance company adjuster out to see your property is probably going to take some time. So the insurance policy requires that you take reasonable measures to mitigate against further damage. By doing so, taking photographs and starting the process of moving wet items out of the structure, cutting drywall, removing insulation, anything that's saturated that could lead to a mold problem, you are acting within the requirements and the four corners of your insurance contract in doing that.
Okay.
I also recommend that people do not discard anything. So when you start removing, you've probably seen these images on the news, when you start removing the damaged property to mitigate against further damage, just pile it outside someplace so that the insurance company has the opportunity to inspect and see the property that was taken out.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Our last question comes from Janice. Janice, please state your question.
Talking to you. Hi, Warren.
Hi, Janice. How are you?
I am good. Very good. Thank you for asking. I have a quick question. Are renter's insurance usually RCVs or are they ACVs?
Generally speaking, they're normally RCV. Renter's policies are fairly inexpensive, and agents will normally sell them with the replacement cost coverage endorsement attached to the policy just because it's a fairly economical and cheap product to buy in the first place.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. But check your policy, because if it doesn't have replacement cost personal property replacement cost coverage endorsement added to it, then it's an ACV settle instead of the RCV.
Okay. I'm just thinking in our business, I mean, do we look at our tenants' rental insurance to see, you know, it seems like it's best for them to have RCVs as opposed to ACVs.
If you're looking out for your tenant's interest, you'd want to recommend to them that they get an RCV, replacement cost value policy, for their contents. To protect your interest, you want to make sure that that policy is endorsed has liability coverage, so if they damage your property, there's coverage for the damage that they cause, and if someone is injured on that property, there's coverage for their injury should the tenant be responsible for it. And the classic example that is taught in most insurance schools out there is the tenant is washing the stairs going to the apartment, and somebody slips and falls. Is it the landlord's fault or the tenant's fault? And most would argue that it's the tenant's fault for washing the stairs and not providing some sort of adequate warning that the stairs may be slippery. So, make sure that that your tenants have the coverage for liability insurance, and you can take an extra step by adding or having them add your business as an additional insured interest to that policy. I have rental properties myself, and I demand when I rent to somebody that they provide me with an insurance binder that lists me as an additional insured interest, so that in the event that something happens, I'm actually a policyholder as well.
Okay, sounds fair enough. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the question. So I want to thank everybody for participating today. It's been a fantastic event for me to get to speak to you, and certainly if you have any questions following up on this topic or any others, feel free to give me a call at 508-761-8800, ** claims from a mobile phone, or email me at info@claimsma.com. Thanks again for participating. Have a great day.